The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 27th of July, 2023. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed, and you're very welcome along to another show, the 9 till noon show. And a busy one for you as always. Lots for you to get involved in conversation-wise. The numbers to do so, WhatsApps and your texts to 086 60 25000, or you can give us a call on 07491 25000. If you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. And a very visual show for you today, as always. Plenty of guests set for you to watch, if you wish to, on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch on your phone, your tablet, your laptop, your big screen, your smart TV, no bother. It's on there, the YouTube app, or your Fire Stick. And we're across Facebook as well, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and on our own website, just click Watch Live. No doubting the big story of the day from a national perspective. It's on the front of all the papers and inside, and that is the very tragic passing, sad passing, just 56 years of age, of Sinead O'Connor. If you want to share an opinion or an experience, maybe you met Sinead, maybe you were at one of her concerts, maybe something important in your life happened that is connected to her, well, feel free to share those thoughts with us on 086 60 25000. We'll be covering that, of course, a little later on, but we always start with the local newspapers, so we'll stick with that. The Tyrconnell Tribune this morning tells us that as the Fanad community reacts to the shock decision by Father Pat McGarvey to quit the parish, Bishop Alan McGuckian has said that over the next while, priests from neighbouring parishes will be available to ensure that services are provided. It may be some considerable time before a new parish priest is appointed. Meanwhile, Sunday Masses are cancelled in two of the four churches in the parish. In his comments at Sunday's Masses, Father McGarvey said, "I'm finished in Fanad." He delivered his unscripted comments before imparting the final blessing. He added, "I've nothing more to give. I've nothing more left to give. The spark has gone," he said. In his final remarks, Father McGarvey added, "It's been a tough few years. It's been a lonesome time. I need a good rest. I've discussed it with the bishop and my own family. Where the future goes, I do not know." And suddenly, he was gone. As parishioners sought confirmation about upcoming family events in the parish, for the first time ever, the Fanad Weekly newsletter did not provide any details about clerical contacts for the next week. Meanwhile, members of the congregation in Fanad told the Tribune that in all honesty, they were not shocked by the decision because of the intensity of Father McGarvey's workload, especially since he was the only resident priest since being appointed parish priest in November 2011. So we reached out to the bishop to see if he had any comment on that, and he said, not at this time. The Donegal Democrat this morning, a delayed gymnasium at Finner Camp, a decayed gymnasium at Finner Camp, which was at the point of being dangerous, is to get a major makeover. The building was put out of commission due to structural damage. Soldiers in the 28th Infantry Battalion have had to use a makeshift weights room since the gym building was shut down. If you want more on that, it's on the front of that paper today. The Donegal News this morning, a Donegal woman who was raped and sexually assaulted by her father when she was a child said she waived her right to anonymity to help end the stigma that is associated with such crimes. Karen Harkin, 22, from Buncrana, made an emotional address outside the central, the Criminal Courts of Justice in Dublin this week after her father, 55-year-old Michael Carter, was sentenced to 10 and a half years in jail. Karen Harkin, who I've quoted there, will be joining me on this programme shortly to discuss her experience, to discuss her decision off the back of her experience to speak publicly, to waive her anonymity, what she hopes to achieve from that. So stay tuned for that. Karen will be joining me very shortly. I believe it's very shortly. It's on this programme anyway. It is first, isn't it? Yeah. The Derry News this morning, the parents of a young Derry boy who underwent major brain surgery 2 years ago have spoken of their joy as they watched him play in his first ever Foyle Cup. Young Caleb Toland, just 7, scored a goal for Maiden City Colts as his emotional mum and dad, Richie and Anya, cheered on from the sidelines. It must have been a wonderful feeling for Caleb and mum and dad there as well. So on to the Nationals, as I say, which are dominated by news of the passing at just 56 years of age of Sinead O'Connor. Sinead O'Connor, the way I observed her was as a human. I mean, an amazing artist. There's no doubt about that. An amazing catalogue of music she produced. I'm not going to lie, it wouldn't necessarily have been the type of stuff I listened to, but I could recognise good music and I know it touched so many people. But what attracted me particularly to her, though, was her vulnerability. The fact that she's just like one of us, that she lived through battles with her mental health like many of us do, like many people we talk to on this programme do. The awful, that she had relationship breakups, difficult relationships. She had people talking about her. A lot of stuff that a lot of people can, particularly in the world of social media now, can relate to, even if they're not famous people like Sinead O'Connor. Trying to find her place in everything, it seemed. She was an incredibly powerful voice at a time, really, when Ireland needed it. Not everyone's going to agree with some of the stuff she advocated for, but she was incredibly powerful in speaking about child sexual abuse and was proven to be correct in much of what she said. Other things, obviously, that she did are not going to appeal to everybody. And then, of course, she lost her son, Shane, who meant so much to her last year. And I was watching some of the videos she posted since, and you could see she was carrying that loss with her very deeply. And probably, would do you ever have spoken to people on this program before that have been predeceased by their children, and you'd never get over it. Your life changes forever. And it was that part of her life, just the human struggles, which are tough enough, but having to do them in the public eye, that that resonated more with me, if that makes sense, than the music. Because I love music, but I'm not, I'm not deep into it. But I recognise that she made some absolutely amazing music. There's just no doubt about that. President Michael D. Higgins said Sinead O'Connor had a unique talent, an extraordinary connection with her audience as Ireland and the world of music reacted to her death at the age of 56. Her family said in a statement last night, "It is with great sadness that we announce the passing of our beloved Sinead. Her family and friends are devastated and have requested privacy at this very difficult time." I hope they are afforded. President Higgins said in a statement, "May I send my deepest condolences to Sinead O'Connor's father, John, the members of her family, and to all of those whom she shared her life. My first reaction on hearing the news of Sinead's loss was to remember her extraordinarily beautiful, unique voice. What was striking in all of the recordings she made and in all her appearances was the authenticity of the performances. While her commitment to the delivery of the song and its meaning was total, to those of us who had the privilege of knowing her, one couldn't but always be struck by the depth of her fearless commitment to the important issues which she brought to public attention, no matter how uncomfortable those truths may have been. What Ireland has lost at such a relatively young age is one of our greatest and most gifted composers, songwriters and performers of recent decades, one who had a unique talent and extraordinary connection with her audience, all of whom held such love and warmth for her." President Higgins said O'Connor's voice and delivery was in so many different ways original, extraordinary, and left one with a deep impression that to have accomplished all she did while carrying the burdens she did was a powerful achievement in its own way. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar also paid tribute, saying her music was loved around the world and her talent was unmatched and beyond compare. "Condolences to her family, her friends, and all who loved her music," he said. Yes, an incredible voice, an incredible artist, and we'll hear more tributes to Sinead O'Connor later on in the show. And as I say, if you yourself have a memory or a comment that you wish to share, please do. But when you think of it, between Sinead, Dolores O'Riordan, both lost recently, two incredibly powerful women, but two Irish women that were international, worldwide stars. And for us to produce them, such a small country, really is quite remarkable. Very sadly, both of them have now passed on to their eternal rewards. The Irish Times this morning, children in psychiatric distress will continue to be lost and disappeared without urgent legislation to regulate the health service executives' young youth mental health services, the chair of the Mental Health Commission has warned. Consultant psychiatrist Dr. John Hillary made the comment yesterday at the publication of a blistering report which found the HSE's Child and Mental Health Services, CAMHS, is creaking at the seams with increasing risk to children for whom the service is provided. This story is not unrelated to the last story as well, particularly with the passing of Sinead O'Connor's son last year. The service is led with poor governance, characterised by failure to manage risk, failure to fund and recruit key staff, failure to look at alternative models of providing services, and the failure to provide a standardised service, said Dr. Susan Finnerty, Chief Mental Health Inspector. Now, me personally, I'm not incredibly well resourced, and I would welcome any sort of break in the budget tax-wise. You would, wouldn't you? But I'll tell you what I would welcome is if that money instead was spent on having proper mental health services for young people and for adults as well. That would really get me excited. That might get me out to the polling booths if I thought that we were taking issues like that really seriously and throwing money at it in a very organised and checked manner so that we could actually start seeing results delivered. That would do me. It's a big story, this one. Rank-and-file Gardaí to vote on a motion of no confidence in the Garda Commissioner over various crises hitting the force. This is the Mail. In a statement last night, the Garda Representative Association said it took the step as it felt Commissioner Drew Harris has failed to address a number of issues, including the current recruitment and retention of officers. Now, if this were to go and it were to pass, it would leave Drew Harris in a very difficult position. Now, of course, this has been because of the developing story overnight. This has sort of been retired to page deep into the paper, effectively. But this, I believe this to be incredibly significant. A special meeting of the GRA Central Executive Committee was convened yesterday, and it was agreed to ballot the GRA membership on a vote of no confidence. I'm not sure if we're covering that, Caroline. Are we covering that? We are indeed, of course. She covers everything, Caroline. She says, what do you think we should do? I say, well, should we do that? Done. Should we do this? Ah, that's done. What about that? Oh, it's already on the programme, so I don't even bother anymore. All right, that's the importance of Caroline's role on the programme. The Irish Farmers Journal this morning, TB reactor numbers surged by 37% in the first 6 months of 2023, and a growing number of herds are subject to disease restrictions. Department of Agriculture figures show that 11,417 reactors were identified up to 2nd of July this year, 3,073 more than the first 6 months of 2022. On to the Red Top tabloids now. And actor Kevin Spacey has said he was humbled by the jury's decision to clear him of 9 sex offenders offences. This is the Irish Daily Star. The Hollywood star cut a tearful figure in the dock at Southwark Crown Court on his birthday yesterday as the jury delivered the not guilty verdict. Spacey was accused of sexually assaulting 4 men over the period between 2001 and 2013, accusations he described as madness. Speaking on the court steps after the verdict, the 64-year-old said, "I would like to say that I'm enormously grateful to the jury for having taken the time to examine all of the evidence and all of the facts carefully before they reached the decision." Now, to all intents and purposes, if you're on social media, you would have been of the view, and you may well still be of the view, that he was guilty as they come. Because that's just the way it is now, trial by social media. But as it turns out, he stood before his peers, 12 of them, 10 thought he was innocent, and out he goes. Right, I don't know enough about it to know the ins and outs of it. The Irish Sun this morning, Kate McCabe told Ireland fans, "We gave it everything. The girls in green will depart the World Cup next week after their exit was confirmed with yesterday's defeat to Canada following the opening night loss to Australia." And I think there's an awful lot to be positive about. And I know it's kind of like people go, well, what's there to be positive about? Well, listen, we qualified for our first World Cup ever. And I thought in both games at times, Ireland were fantastic. You have to understand, it's like all sports, there's ranks, you know. So if you get someone who's a rank 30 boxer against the number one in the world, you don't expect them to be leading the fight halfway through. I'm not saying Canada were ranked number one in the world as such. I don't know exactly where they are ranked. that's being honest. But Ireland were great. They were fantastic on the front foot. Then that goal went in and then things began to unravel somewhat. But I think we should all be, sorry, I can't speak for anyone else. I'm very proud of what they achieved. And hopefully now they will build on that and we'll see more young girls and boys for the men's team going out to training and saying, look, I want to go to a World Cup into the future. And finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror, the number of TV licence fees sold in the third week of July plummeted by 37%, new figures have shown. So you're not wobbling, you're not happy, and you're still not paying your TV licence. It brings the total loss for RTE this month alone to 1.86 million. It follows weeks of sustained decreases in the number of people paying the €160 fee in the wake of the financial crisis at the national broadcaster. Figures previously provided by the Department of Media showed that the licence fee sales had fallen for the first time for the first 2 weeks of this month. New figures show the figures have now plummeted even further. There you go. You're not forgetting, are you? Okay. For the next wee while, we're going to be speaking to Karen Harkin about her experience, which involves a tough conversation that might not be for everybody. So just to be warned in relation to that. And it's off the back of news this week that a Donegal man who raped and sexually abused his young daughter a decade ago has been jailed for 10 and a half years. 55-year-old Michael Carter was found guilty last month following a trial at the Central Criminal Court of one count of rape, 25 sample counts of sexual assault between June 2010 and June 2014 when his daughter Karen Harkin was aged between 9 and 12 years old. The court was previously told that Carter of Kinnego in Buncrana, County Donegal, does not accept the verdict of the jury and maintains his innocence. That's a rental address, by the way. Ms. Harkin, who's now 22 and who is in front of me, waived her anonymity so her father can be named. Karen, thanks very much for calling in and chatting to us. How are you keeping, I suppose, first is my first question. Are you okay?
I'm doing good, yeah. I think I'm just getting by at the minute, but I feel a bit of relief now that it's actually all over me and that I can finally start to move on in a way.
How important was it for you, for this person to be identified, for you to be able to have your voice in this in this whole process post the awful abuse you endured?
I think it was very important because for so long I internalised the feelings of guilt and shame because he was my father, I thought it was my fault. So to be honest, it was very important for me to be able to even speak out because even for not that long before the court, I was kind of in two minds. I was just so nervous. I was like, felt like people were going to be like, oh no, it's definitely her fault. It's like, because I always went back to visit him, but at the end of the day, he was my father. So I didn't know any different than to keep going back. And
well, you were a young girl.
Him. Yeah, I was
thinking you were doing the right thing, what the right thing is to do, what you're supposed to do.
Definitely, yeah. I think it was just because he was my father at the end of the day, I just felt like if I didn't go see him that I would be leaving him alone because at the time my parents were separated and me and my siblings lived with my mother. So I even felt guilt at that time for not going to see him all the time. So I think it was just normal for me.
It must have been a great deal of pressure for you through your teenage years, the guilt you felt of feeling you must visit him, what everyone else in the family might think, you know, that it might blow the family apart as much as, you know, obviously your parents were separated already. Did you carry that as well with you? Were you saying, you know, will people believe me? Will they blame me? Not just the public or people that might find out, but the people closest to you.
Definitely, yeah. I think I was just so scared. I thought that my own family, my mother and my brothers and sisters, I thought that they would blame me. And I was just so scared to tell them because I couldn't, being of that age and being of just innocence, I suppose, I just couldn't understand how it couldn't be my fault.
Mm.
Because in a way I felt like I played a part because I always went back and visited him. I always stayed over. So for years, them feelings kind of crippled me in a way because I could never release myself from those feelings of guilt or those feelings of shame. And it hasn't been until recently that I've been able to kind of come to terms with them and realise that it wasn't my fault.
Yeah. And do you have those feelings from you gone? I mean, when we endure emotions for a long period of time, it can take a long time for them to lift there. They can be like almost like a half-life.
Mm-hmm.
So whilst you say, you know, it's helping you release release you from those feelings of guilt? Is that an ongoing process that you're working through even as a 22-year-old?
Definitely, yeah.
Because this is not a light switch, is it? Everything's not fixed all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's not like I just wake up after court and be like, okay, that's me fixed. I'm no longer feel the way I felt. But it's like, it definitely is an ongoing process. I know it might take me even years to fully release and those feelings of guilt, but and I might not even release them, but it has just kind of made me let go of some of them.
Yeah, and I think you can work through them in a different way now.
Definitely, I definitely can. I feel like before, even when I was trying, my family were trying to help me work through them, and I was listening to them, but I wasn't taking in anything that they were saying. And I think now, just realizing how wrong it was and how many people have like shown so much support to me and have told me like that it could and couldn't in no way be my fault. And I think that that it definitely just helps to have others like family, friends, and literally anyone out there who can understand.
Yeah, well, I mean, for what it's worth, as a parent, I feel our only significant job really is to care for our children, to make sure they're safe, to deal with whatever moods that they may have or the little tantrums that they might throw, or and to guide them as best we can through their education and life. I mean, sometimes we fail, but we try.
Yeah.
And for anyone, no one could ever believe that it could ever be your fault. You were failed. You know what I mean? It's never, ever, there's not one iota of responsibility that you bear for that. It was another person that completely failed in their responsibility and even went beyond failing. And I'm hoping, I'm sure you will in time fully realise that if you don't already. Up until the age of nine, and I only want to you to speak about what you're comfortable about speaking about and also what you think is helpful in speaking to other people, because I know you're doing this for reasons which we'll talk about a little later on, but to help other people. Up until the age of nine, was everything like relatively normal?
Definitely, yeah. I just lived a normal childhood. There was nothing out of the ordinary, to be honest. I did just normal things any child would do. And I think that's why it kind of made it hard, because it just changed in a way. Mm. And part of me couldn't understand it, because it was so normal before that even when it had started, I still kind of thought, okay, this might be normal. Like, it could be normal. Mm. So,
did you understand what was happening?
At the very beginning, I didn't. I didn't have a clue, to be honest, what was going on. I think just at that age, I was so innocent and I didn't know anything regarding abuse or sexual intercourse or anything at all. So it was so confusing, because even if, like, people have said to me, oh, like, there's so much things out there, like, you could have heard or something, but I didn't even know what it was to be able to identify what was happening. So it was kind of like confusing in a way, because sometimes like I would feel, I think as I got a bit older and it was happening and I realised that this happens no matter what, like if I want it to happen or not, or if I'm reluctant or not, that it's going to happen no matter what. So I think that made me realise, not fully, but it made me realise in a way that this can't be right, like it can't.
Would it have helped? And I don't think looking back at things as if things were different ever helps. But if you had been given some sort of a basic understanding of these things at school, do you think it would have helped for you to sort of go, right, well, this isn't wrong, or this is wrong, sorry?
I don't know, to be honest. I feel like maybe at that age, I probably still wouldn't have fully
understood. And I think it's in the context of what should be a loving and caring relationship, isn't it? And that's where it becomes, even if you were told, you know.
Definitely, because even when I was older and I did understand, I still was like, still didn't think it was his fault. I still thought it was my fault. So I don't know, to be honest, if I would have even understood at that age.
And it continued for 3 years.
It continued from when I was nine till I was around 12, so 4 years or so, maybe.
Of course, yeah. Sorry, inclusive. Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
For everything you've been through, Karen. And at what stage did it become clear to you that this was wrong? I mean, obviously you knew it was wrong, but you talked of sort of the confusion as to, is it normal or is it not normal? Was there a point then where you said, obviously this is, I realise now fully that what's happening here is really...
I think it was only in my later teen years that I really realised, to be honest, because I still kept a secret from when I was nine until I was in my later teens, and I think I didn't begin to realise until then that it was wrong.
And is it clear what made it stop at 12?
It's not, no. It's just, people have asked me and I just couldn't explain it. It was, all I remember is that he moved house whenever I was 12 years old, and whenever he moved into that new house, it never happened again. And it still was in the back of my mind because I still visited him. So I still was as if I was waiting for it to happen, but it just never did after that.
Right. So then what was, because you're clever, you're very academic, aren't you? So how then did you continue through your teens with what you went through, still working out what actually happened? As you say, you were later in your teens when you realised exactly what was happening and why it was wrong. Like, how was life then, you know, from 13, 14, 15 and 16? Now, obviously, it was a sort of a fake reality, and, and that's clear now. Yeah. So I'm fully aware of that, by the way. But what was it relatively normal, or how were you affected?
I think for a while it was probably relatively normal, because I kind of just buried those feelings until I was in my later teens, until I actually spoke out about it. So I think I did live quite a normal life, but it was kind of like I was suffering in silence, because I felt like I couldn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And I couldn't.
And the longer it went, did it become more difficult then for,
the longer it went, yeah, it did become more difficult, because even when I was in my early teens in school, all my friends were just so much more outgoing and so much more like they were in relationships from a young age, and I just couldn't imagine myself in any sort of relationship. I couldn't imagine myself even sometimes going out at night. I was kept myself very isolated from going out life, kind of, and I kept myself very isolated from like meeting up with my friends, because I was so scared that they could find out and that maybe they would stop talking to me, or that they would just hate me in a way.
Yeah.
So,
because this was still this feeling, and it all comes back to you feeling there's some sense of responsibility, which is just an awful cross for you to bear through those years that you should have just been enjoying every minute of life. What happened then? That at what stage of your life then did you say, right, I have to speak out here? Or what happened there? Was it a particular conversation or a particular thing that happened to you in your life?
Yeah, so it was one evening I was in my auntie's house, and there was something on the news about, I think if you remember, it was like about the priests and how they had abused altar boys and girls. And I think it was on the news at the time, and I think whenever I heard it, I just became so overwhelmed and so emotional, and I began to cry. And then she asked me if everything was okay, and then at that point I just said it then. I think it was even strange for me to say it then, because I was holding myself back from saying it for so long. And like, I feel like there was instances before where I could have said it, but I was just like, no, like, this is my fault. I don't want people to know how like shameful my life is in a way.
Okay. And what was the reaction?
I think it was just utter shock. And she just began like asking me questions of what had happened. And
because she would have gone into, well, I don't know your aunt, but I think a lot of us would go into panic mode.
Yeah.
Tell us what do you mean? How did that, you know, because we're not really equipped to deal with that, because that was a huge thing for her to sort of hear as well, as you, a huge thing for you to sort of relieve yourself of as well.
To be honest, I think she was quite calm in a way, because I was starting to panic. So I think maybe she realised that
one of us is going to
us needs to take the reins. Yeah. So, I think she was quite calm in a way, and she kind of helped me, but she just reassured me that it wasn't my fault and that I was doing the right thing by speaking out.
Was there, in that moment, was there an instant slight relief? In other words, you know what I mean? Was it like, wow, someone's heard what I've carried and they've reassured me that it's not my fault? That must have been an amazing moment in this whole thing.
Definitely, yeah. I think I probably will never feel relief like it, because for something that I have only said in my head for so many years, my entire life, basically, And to finally say it out loud, it was like it was surreal in a way. It was just crazy.
Yeah, but then, of course, now it's out there.
Yeah.
So then it's other members of the family. So how did that progress then? At what point did you tell the rest of the family, or how long did you wait to go to the Gardaí, or how did you decide to go to the Gardaí?
I didn't really know what happens after I spoke out, to be honest. And I think it was my family who kind of guided me and said, like, this is what you can do, or like, but only do it if you feel comfortable. So, to be honest, I don't remember how long after it was that I went to the guards, but I think it was a terrifying experience.
How was that experience? How did you find the initial interactions with the Gardaí? Because you're talking, it's not a historical case, but it's going back a number of years, and it's probably going to come down to your word against another person's
definitely,
word, right?
Yeah.
So how was that whole conversation that you had with them?
So it kind of did come down, like it felt like it came down to my father's word against my word, to be honest. But I didn't know what to expect going in there, but I remember just the first day that I went in there, they were just so supportive, and it was crazy in a way because they didn't even doubt me in any way. They just listened to what I had to say and took my life story on board, basically, and they showed me a huge amount of support throughout since then and throughout the whole process, to be honest. So it was, I wouldn't go back and change the fact that I did speak out about it and that I did go to the guards.
Yeah. He denied it at the time, continues to deny it now.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant obviously there was going to be a trial, and you were going to have to give evidence of that trial.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's nothing in life to prepare us for having to do that, because whatever way, as difficult as it was over those years before you actually spoke to your auntie and then to the rest of the family, that was in private.
Yeah.
This was a public space, really.
Mm-hmm.
Your father would have been there when you were given evidence.
Yeah, it was.
Which is incredibly difficult for you. How long were you in given evidence for?
So the trial lasted about maybe, I think, 8 days.
Mm.
And I think it wasn't until maybe the second day that I actually gave evidence. But I remember before I went in to the, when I stepped into the actual court building, I was like, oh, this is fine, like, I'll be okay, like, this isn't a big deal. And then I remember as I just stepped foot in the courtroom, just an overwhelming sense of fear. And I felt like I began to shake in a way, and I was just, I couldn't even eat. Like, I felt like I was going to get sick, or I couldn't even stand. It was just, it was something I'll never be able.
It all came down to that, didn't it?
Definitely, yeah. Literally just came down to the last minute of
because
actually
being in
there. Because
we can't forget either what you've been through, but that you're 22.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And as you go through life, and people can be very mature at 22, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, but just you learn little things as you go through life, and that's all ahead of you, thank God. But, you know, I think it's a huge thing for someone of your age and what you've been through to have to do in the search for justice. But then to recount it, I suppose, and I mean, we're certainly not going to do that now. Well, I imagine that must be very difficult. Was cross-examination difficult?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, just even I find going up there and when I was talking to my own barrister and he was helping guiding me through my story, I think even that was difficult because, to be honest, it has only been my family and the Gardaí and that I have really spoke to about and like close friends. But I think when I was sitting up there and realizing that there is, first of all, 12 complete strangers on the jury who are listening to my story, and then the judge herself and other people, other Gardaí there, and it was just terrifying in a way. And then the fact that he was there, as my father was there as well, kind of made it emotionally daunting in a way, because I knew that he was in denial, so it kind of was just so scary because I was like, my own father is sitting there listening to me and he either doesn't believe it or doesn't want to admit it. So
and then also, he mustn't care at all, because if he cared, he wouldn't put me through this.
Yeah, definitely. It just felt like I was,
this is not a stranger. This is
my father, yeah. Your father. Somebody who was,
you thought, right, now's the time.
It's somebody who was supposed to love me, like who was supposed to care for me all those years ago.
And did you think, what is your view on him denying it even now?
To be honest, I think, I don't know really what I think. I think it still kind of hurts. Well, obviously it hurts in a way because I'm like, my own father is making me out to be a liar in a way, and it's as if I am no one to him. But I don't know if it would make it any easier if he did admit to it, because I think it would kind of upset me some, possibly even more. I know it might be hard to understand, but I think possibly more it would upset me, because I would be like, okay, he's actually taking accountability for his actions. Mm-hmm. But it, even if he never admits it, I think it will never take away from the fact that it happened and that it
changed really my life. And really, how, you don't even know how you might feel if you did.
So definitely we're,
you know, we just simply don't know.
But I mean,
it, obviously, there was your loss of innocence and much of your life, the way you should have been living it, taken away from you. But also, it's the loss of a parent, but a parent that's not not dead. How do you process that, or do you, or what's your feelings?
I think
because you can't, you do reference him as your father.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what seems still natural to come off the tip of your tongue, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he definitely is my father.
Yeah.
He still will always be my father. I will never not see him as my father, to be honest. And I think that's what I found so hard growing up, because I just was like, if I tell, then I don't know what's going to happen. And even if I go through with this court process, in a way, I'm losing my father. And even though I kind of lost him all those years ago when he started to abuse me, that I think part of my inner child held out hope to still have a relationship with him and to still kind of do all those normal things that other people would do. But I just knew that it wasn't right, and it
In your impact statement, and maybe taking this a little bit out of context, but you says, I shouldn't have to live my life feeling sorry for him. Mm-hmm. Has this process relieved you of the sympathy, or do you still feel sorry for him?
It has relieved me of some sympathy for him, but I definitely still do feel some sense of sorrow for him, because even on the last day when they were calling out the sentence and he was standing there, and I think in a way I became so overwhelmed. I became so sad, because it was kind of like the final stepping stone for me to realise that he is going away and he has been punished for what he did. And even though I know it is right, and I know it is so right, not just for me, but for so many other people out there, it still is hard. And I don't know, I think sometimes my family may find it hard to understand why I feel sorry for him, and why my heart kind of breaks in a way that I am sending him away. But it's just something that is so hard to explain, I think.
Yeah, of course. And no one could understand it other than those that maybe have gone through something similar.
Yeah.
The sentence, 10 and a half years effectively, do you have an opinion on that?
To be honest, I think I went in there not looking for a specific outcome. I think I just wanted my story to be out there, and I wanted basically him just to be recognised for what he did, because I feel like he has had such a good name, or that he, like, I feel like everybody loved him and everybody like thought so well of him. And so I don't think, no matter how long it would have been, that I would have been either happy or sad.
You don't get any satisfaction from it, effectively.
No,
I don't. Okay, it's not relevant.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you stood in the court and delivered your victim impact statement and your evidence as 22-year-old Karen, but in a way, were you, you know how sometimes they say, you know, what would you tell your 9-year-old self or your 5-year-old self or whatever? Was that also sort of 9-year-old Karen standing up there? Like, were you speaking on behalf of your 9-year-old self?
Definitely, yeah. I think because I felt like I had no voice back then, that I couldn't speak, and that I was just so scared. So standing up there as my 9-year-old self, I'd say, in a way I did. And it just made me so proud of myself, and it made me realise that I was doing the right thing. Because even though I'm speaking about the abuse, it is me speaking about my past self and my younger self. So definitely to be able to stand up for my 9-year-old self was a big thing for me.
Yeah, I hope you're proud of yourself, are you?
I definitely am, in a way. Okay. I know it might sound...
No, it's not. It doesn't sound anything at all. That's why I wanted to say it first. Now, the way that the system works is if you hadn't waived your anonymity, he would have still been charged, still gone to prison. People maybe in the local area who knew would have known, yeah. Right? But your experience would have been...
Different.
No one would know it happened, yeah. Okay? So you still would be there. You know, you're not going to go into every place saying, look, this is what... Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So... you have to waive your anonymity then in order to name your abuser. And what do you hope that does for other people? And I think it's only other people that it's relevant to. For some people, everyone has to deal with things differently, don't mm-hmm. they,
yeah.
Karen? But there are going to be people that were like you that are just waiting for one thing to sort of get justice for themselves. Yeah. And I suppose it's they that you're sort of... For others, they'll deal with it in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. It's for them that you're hoping to give courage to speak out to or support maybe actually, because they're full of courage having to endure what they've endured, but to give them the support to speak out if it suits them.
Definitely, yeah. I think it was very important for me to be able to waive my anonymity because I think for victims, it's so scary and it's so hard for us to understand why we should speak about it and why we're not at fault. So I really hope in a way that it will, for anyone listening out there, that they can realise that they're not alone, that they're not at fault, no matter how many times you go over it in your head. There is no rational explanation that can make it your fault, because no matter what age you are, you can't be at fault. So I really hope in a way that this helps them to realise that they can speak out and not even just give them the courage, but just give them the hope that their life can change and that they won't always be stuck in that cycle of abuse.
Yeah, because you can be stuck in the cycle of abuse even once the abuse has stopped.
Yeah, definitely. You can be stuck in it for so long. Yeah. You can just kind of trap yourself in it, I think, to be honest.
Well, what about your life for the future now? You are hoping to go on to third level now, or have you begun that process?
I haven't begun it yet. No, but I will apply in whenever CAO.
Do you know what you
opens.
Want to do?
I want to do secondary school teaching, I hope, Spanish and Irish, hopefully, if it all works out. So I am looking forward to that. And
yeah.
I feel like I have held back from that for so many years because I didn't want to go on to college with this hanging over me, to be honest. And
Your understanding of the experience because of you going through it, but also the way you can sort of analyse it the inner voices and you articulate it so well. Would part of you also maybe want to be able to work in that area to sort of, you know, help others who've gone through it? Because, as I say, the way you can articulate what you've been through, it's very useful. It's a skill, if you know what I mean.
Definitely, yeah. I think from even when I was younger, like, I remember my family used to say, like, I can no longer say the word I don't know because no matter what they asked me, my only response was, I don't know, I don't know. So from a younger age until now, the difference that I can see in myself, there is no way that I wouldn't want to help other people and help them find their voice in a way and help them to understand how they're actually feeling, because sometimes I didn't even understand. Like, I was like, this is what I'm thinking, but I don't know how I'm actually feeling. So I definitely would like to help other people.
Yeah, and you have to fully work through where you're at and where you're going to. The time has to be right for that, doesn't it? Because I would imagine, you know, you have used your platform to speak out and you've spoken to various outlets and what have you, but that'll die down to some extent. And I suppose it's really then...
Yeah.
When you'll be able to sit down and start processing what's happened over the course of the, you know, the conviction, the trial and what have you, really, because you've been very busy the last little while.
Definitely, yeah. I think even a few people have mentioned to me, like, it's a very, like, hectic kind of time at the minute, and I think I'm...
But now's the time you have to get the message out.
Definitely, you know, yeah. I think I need to just go with it, and part of me feels like I'm a bystander in a way, if that makes sense. Mm. Like, I'm watching myself... speak out, and I'm watching myself.
It's like imposter syndrome or something,
yes,
is it?
Definitely,
it's okay, I get you. But that'll all make sense over time as well. Do you think you'll ever have a relationship with your father again?
To be honest, I don't think so. I think that I deserve it. I deserve for my 9-year-old self not to put myself through.
It's not about what you'd want. I mean, thankfully, you've seen it now that it would never be because you feel sorry for him or what he might want. But yeah, definitely. Okay. We have, as you can imagine, I'm not going to keep you much longer, Karen.
That's okay.
Loads and loads of people texting in support of you, praising you, your bravery, how you've spoken out, the sacrifices you've made to sort of support others who've been going through it. And if there's people listening and they're at that point in their life, whereby they go, right, okay, I can do this too. Mm-hmm. Your experience with the process is not something you discourage people from going through. It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that walking into the courtroom, as you described, you know, it's like, well, okay. But it's manageable. You can come through the other end and you can get justice for yourself.
Definitely, yeah. It is definitely an emotionally daunting experience. I'm not going to say it's easy, like it's in no way easy, and it's kind of, sometimes I feel like it could have broken me, but I just want to reassure people that you will have so much support along the way and that you will never be alone. And that I know, like, for so long, I remember going, when I was in the process of reporting it to the Gardaí, there were so many times that I was like, oh no, I'm not doing this and I'm taking it back. And but I just had to sit with it and realise that, okay, this is going to be okay. And even after going through the process and even having my father kind of, he was like sitting behind me in like the area that he was sitting, I think that I just felt like I wasn't alone and that I felt that I could do it. So I would definitely encourage people.
Here's the one. I'm not putting you on the spot because I think you're well able to answer this one and it might help this person.
Mm-hmm.
As a mother of a child abused, I'm broken that I didn't see it. That my daughter couldn't come to me. That I failed her. How would Karen respond to a parent who feels such an utter failure? So this is the mother who themselves now is taking the blame and the guilt, and that's heartbreaking, isn't it? They're having to live with something there.
It definitely is heartbreaking.
What's your insight and what are your words to that mum?
I think that you should just reassure yourself that it's not something that you can ever imagine that is going to happen to your child, and no matter how hard you try and how supportive of a mother you are, it's so hard to miss these things.
So easy to miss them.
Miss them, sorry. So easy to miss them. And I remember even from when I was a child and my mother was there, it's not that you don't feel like she's there to support you, it's just that you feel so fear of anyone, of telling anyone. And I think it was just so scary. So in a way, I don't think that any parent, mother or father, if it's the opposite way of boys in my case, that they should feel any sense of guilt or any sense of responsibility, because it's not their fault, it's the abuser's fault. So I think that in a way that
mom needs to give herself a break.
She definitely does, yeah.
You know, give yourself a break, mom. It's not your fault. You've heard it from Karen, who's got an amazing insight into this. And who herself was able to conceal this from people for her own reasons. And it was when the time was right. So just please give yourself a break, mum, because she's torturing herself
with
that. I can see it in the words. It's
like
only black on white, but
imprisoning herself in the feelings of...
Karen, thanks so much for coming in to us and talking
thanks
at this time.
Me.
I wish you... I just wish you all the happiness and success and whatever you want in life. I'm working through it all too to get into the space that you want to be in. It's still a journey that you're still on.
Thank you so much.
As I say, everyone's texting in and calling in supporting you, and we just wish nothing but good things for you.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.